Hello and welcome back to An Abundance of Not, and we wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Garrett, for our U.S. listeners, hello. What? It's Thanksgiving for the U.S. listeners, not for anybody else.
Well, it should be Thanksgiving for everybody, because obviously the U.S. makes all the rules. Or unless we think we are the ones who need to enforce all the rules.
Well, that's the truth.
So,
Okay, well, for our international viewers, just have a big dinner to be thankful for things.
There you go.
Be thankful we're not bombing you right now.
Okay, wow. I tried to be nice about that one, but it's just like, yeah, you know what?
Way to take it there.
Be glad we're not policing you. Have fun. Right.
I don't care.
Apparently, just enjoy your bread. I don't know.
Hate me. I don't care. What's up, fellas?
How you doing?
Fantastic. Given that tomorrow or today for our listeners is a big old fat turkey day, a nice 4-day weekend is highly anticipated.
So you're not working Friday?
No. Office is closed.
So those plans that I needed.
The ones that I sent back to you today. Oh.
No, I saw those ones.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Anyway.
I have a single
day. It's alright. We were going to improvise.
We have a single day.
I have a single day.
You work on Friday?
I work on Friday.
Oh, that sucks.
But I do get the following Wednesday off.
But did they switch you to salary?
Don't I wish.
No, but it's food industry and Friday's not a holiday, so...
Oh, so it's not special time, or...
Well, because another dish or person in my area, my position, requested that day off, I have to come in to fill in. That person should then... Well,
take one of your shifts.
A third person will then fill in for me on Wednesday. I will have a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3-day weekend next weekend.
Oh.
I mean, that's cool.
Well, that'll be nice.
Yeah.
Well, at least you're not completely losing it. That's a good thing.
Nope.
It's just partially going out of his mind.
Oh, I've been out of my mind for years.
You had to have been in your mind in the first place.
Agreed.
So, duly noted. What's new, guys?
Well, hopefully our sound quality is up to snuff. We have moved. We are in our new digs. We are recording from the new home of An Abundance of Not.
New studio.
It's as pleasant for our listeners as it is for us. Yeah, been here about a week. People saw our Facebook page. They knew that we weren't recording last week as we were still getting set up. And here we are, for the most part, set up. A few tweaks here on the horizon, but for the most part, we're good to go.
A few shelves taken out, a few things screwed into a wall.
That's right.
Some sound foam to be added.
Say that again?
Some sound foam to be added.
Exactly. That's going to get ordered this week, and hopefully we'll... I doubt I'll have it in time for next week's podcast, but it's definitely in the works.
Cool.
So, looking forward to that. I had to build a desk, which is what I'm using right now. It's not fully complete, but it's a work in progress, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It's... What? Plywood, was it?
3/4-inch plywood with some little bit of molding and some 2x2s for bracing with plans for an epoxy top surface.
What do you plan to put in this epoxy top?
I'm not sure. I was thinking about maybe doing like some copper sheeting or something like that. They could have some really cool like look to it. I thought about maybe riveting it, but that's a lot of work.
Actually, what you should do is you should get the like a plate of copper or a plate of metal. And have the logo, I don't know what it's called, like welded
etched,
out of it.
Etched into it or, yeah, plasma cut out of it. That could be cool.
And have that acrylic in.
There you go. The official studio.
That's a good idea, actually. I'll think about that. Have to find somebody who can do it.
Orange hey, Wade.
Choppers? Yes? What's up?
Way to spend Garrett's money. Proud of you.
That's right. Hey. It's coming out of his paycheck. It's fine.
Oh.
No, it's going into his thing. He's going to consider it. If he wants to spend the money on that idea, that's his point. But if he wants to have this thing official looking, I am just nearly offering my opinion.
So it's been a couple weeks on my front.
It's been almost a month on your front. What, 3 weeks now?
No, I only took 2 weeks off.
Well, you took a... Wade and I did a podcast without you.
I had a week. Yep. And then last week you moved.
Yeah.
That's 2 weeks.
So that's 2 weeks.
And the week before that, you were out here and we didn't record. So you haven't done a podcast in 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Welcome back.
Yeah. So, guys, it's been a while. I forgot what you sounded like.
No, you didn't.
I'm pretty sure you may have forgotten what I sound like, but Garrett, I doubt that.
That's right.
When he's yelling at like...
Who could forget this voice?
When he calls you up and goes, these plans are going to be ready by tomorrow. Nope.
I did that to him today. He sent me an email and I was like, yeah, not happy. It's awesome. Anyway, so yeah. Anything new or you'd like to share on your front, Brad, before we get into the...
Entertainment.
Yeah.
So, the week before the move, the reason why I was not on the week before that, was my lovely wife ended up in hospital. I think you alluded to that on the recording.
I merely mentioned you had something going on, and I didn't want to be the one to divulge to the world, should you not want it to be.
Sure.
Was being diplomatic and considerate.
No, we appreciated that very, very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, yeah.
No, it wasn't a heart attack.
No, it was not a heart attack, nor was it a stroke. Although, she was starting to have some stroke-like symptoms, so we went up to the ER and, you know, just to get her checked out and find out what was going on, and she ended up getting admitted and spent almost a week in hospital, 5 days in hospital, and we ended up finding out that she is suffering from multiple sclerosis.
Did you say 5 days in hospital?
Yes.
Oh, you do the British thing.
What did I say?
The foreign thing.
He's from Australia.
So. I know, but he's been here since he was 14. And seeing as how many hospitals he visits, you know, on a yearly basis, it's funny that he still uses the term...
In hospital, not at
a hospital, but just at hospital.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't catch that.
It's the foreign lingo thing.
It's been engraved when he was a child. He just can't get over it.
So yeah, we got that news and heavy dose of treatment later, and she's doing a lot better now.
Yeah, you said what, 5 days or something like that.
Yeah, 5 days, and then medication to come home for the next, well, from the time she was released, it was like 2 weeks worth of recovery medication to get her back on her feet, but a lot better.
Now,
been out running with the dog.
For those who don't know, what is sclerosis?
Give us a quick definition of MS.
Okay, so the Cliff Notes version of MS is... the protective coating around the neurons in your brain kind of corrodes away.
Your immune system.
So your immune system is hyperactive as opposed to being suppressed. And when you're not sick, rather than shutting down like everybody else's does and what it's supposed to, it stays active and has nothing to do. So it starts eating away the coating on the neurons, the nerves in the brain. Now, for most of the time, that has no noticeable effect. But every now and then, there's some trigger factors, stress, temperature, in some cases, diet. There's a whole bunch for different people. Everybody presents differently. But when one of these factors plays in, or too much of it, it can cause essentially the wiring to short out. And, you know, that can vary how that presents. In this case, it was weakness and numbness. So it's the damage is not repairable, but the cause is manageable. So,
either way, it definitely sounded like a scary situation for you guys. And
yeah, it was a little scary, and especially the uncertainty factor, not knowing what was going on. Now that we've got the information, you know, we're moving forward. For the most part, there's no effect apart from those flare-ups. You know, we're still planning vacations and hiking and running with the dog, and the day-to-day stuff is fine. It's just every now and then it'll put her flat on her back.
Well, and it's like you told me, and I think it's important for people to realize, is that just because the doctor told her, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago that, hey, you know, you have this disease, it doesn't mean that that morning she all of a sudden just woke up and had that disease. She's probably had it for a while, and the symptoms were just not severe enough to raise alarm up until that point. Yep. So
yes. So
it's just putting a label to it.
Yeah, so that's important for any of our listeners that might be going through it. You know, it's they gave it a name, and that was it. You know, that day was no different than the day before, except now we had a name for it. And, you know, was it a week before, 2 weeks before she was in the hospital? We went hiking in the mountains of Kentucky and then flew down to Las Vegas for the air show and went hiking down there. So, you know, we're not changing anything as far as that goes. You just keep on. Like we just have to be more mindful of some of the triggers.
It's just one more little pill thing to take with you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. I mean, not trying to minimize it, but, you know, with the medication to manage it, yes. Most of the time, you're right, Wade. It's just another pill you got to take, and that keeps it fairly well subdued. And, you know, recognizing that every now and then she's going to get worn out. This, it is a wearing out kind of condition, so every now and then she needs a nap.
Yep. And it's fair to say, too, that, you know, this disease, it doesn't lead to one particular outcome. There are people, I know people, who have had it and live very ordinary, normal lives. And, you know, you wouldn't know it by looking at them that they, you know, were suffering from anything.
Yep.
But there are people that have it, and it's definitely more severe. It's attacked the nerves for vision or hearing or motor functions or whatever, and it can definitely present itself in a lot of different ways. Some very minute, like exhaustion, and some more severe. And it's just it's kind of a roll of the dice to see what you get, unfortunately.
Yep. Very true.
So, well,
obviously, so apart from that, it's been, you know, fairly mundane week.
So anywho, on to some more happier news.
Okay, we jumping into movies? Is that your segue into movies? All right, segue into movies, I guess.
It's, what, 13 minutes?
It's only 13 minutes of personal stuff. It's great. So coming out this week, we have Penguins of Madagascar. This is the continuing saga of the Madagascar movies, for those who don't know. This is critically rated at 63%. It is rated PG, as one would expect. The penguins team up with the North Wind, led by the voice of Benedict Cumberbatch, out to stop the villainous Dr. Octavius Brine, voiced by John Malkovich, who is set on destroying the world as we know it. I think that's on your radar, Brad, and it's on ours for this long weekend, too. I'm not sure if it's a guarantee, but hopefully one of us will have something to say about this movie.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed from our side. We're headed out to see it tomorrow morning.
Fantastic. Well, if we don't see it, then we'll look forward to your updates.
Critique.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Also coming out this week is Horrible Bosses 2. This is a whopping critic rating of 25%. This is rated R, so not for the chillins. The core team from Horrible Bosses 1 reunite with the added faces of Chris Pine, Christoph Waltz, and Christoph Waltz, rather, stand in the way of our working stiffs who are on their way to obtaining their dreams of success. I can tell you, with that synopsis, I'm just rushing right out to see that one.
Milking on the popularity of the first one.
Pretty much. Additionally, we have The Imitation Game. This is 84% critic rating. It is PG-13. Once again, the Benedict Cumberbatch makes an appearance, as well as, I believe, Keira Knightley is in this one. But this is the story of the British mathematician, logician, cryptologist, and computer scientist who led the charge on the cracking of the German Enigma code to help the Allies win in World War II. He later went on to assist the University of Manchester after the war, but was prosecuted for homosexual acts, which the country deemed illegal. I saw the trailer for this, and it does look interesting, especially from the spy and the history factor.
Sure.
But with the schedule this weekend, I can't say that it's something we're going to go see. But
that one and the other, which I think you're going to get to, the other historic movie, or historic based movie that's out right now. They're both on my radar, but probably not until they come out on DVD.
Are you talking about The Theory of Everything, the Stephen Hawking movie? Or Fury, the tank movie?
That's the one.
Fury. Fair enough.
No.
No? What?
I'm so confused. The Theory of Everything.
There we go. Okay. That's what I figured. I've actually heard some reviews. It's supposed to be pretty good. It's just I'm not sure what its release base was. It didn't make a ton of money, so I'm under the impression that it was a very limited theatrical release. Two more that are coming out this week that we'll touch base on briefly. The Babadook, which is rated at 97%. This seems like, I don't want to say an indie film, but maybe a lower budget. Not a lot of big name actors in this. But 6 years after her husband's death, Amelia, at loss, struggles to discipline her six-year-old son she finds impossible to love. Well, that's depressing. The son believes that there's a monster coming to kill them both. A disturbing book appears, The Babadook, shows up on their doorstep, essentially. Samuel, the son, is convinced Babadook is the creature he has been dreaming about. His hallucinations spiral out of control, and Amelia is forced to medicate Samuel, only to start seeing glimpses of the creature Samuel has been warning her about, leading you to believe that the creature is in fact real.
Okay, that actually sounds pretty awesome in my respect.
That actually sounds like it has some promise.
That's like, okay, we have a creature. All right, I have no idea what this thing is. And that falls into my opinion of, I don't know what it is, it scares me.
There you go.
When it's like,
and again, it's 97% critic rating, so critics felt it was decent too.
Awesome. When's that? I need to see that one.
Comes out this week.
Woo!
And finally coming out this week, Before I Disappear. This is 64% critic rating. I have to note, Babadook and Before I Disappear are currently not rated on the content-wise, as far as PG-13, R, etc. They are not rated there. But Before I Disappear, a troubled young man and straight-laced niece embark on a thrilling odyssey through New York in a heart-treading drama based on an Oscar-winning short. As his life hits rock bottom, Richie decides to end it all, only to have his half-hearted suicide attempt interrupted by his urgent request from his sister, played by Emily Rossum. She was in Day After Tomorrow and also Christine Daae in the Phantom of the Opera movie. To babysit his niece. So begins a madcap tour of Manhattan after dark, as uncle and niece find unexpected bonds in their unlikeliest of places. Ron Perlman co-stars in this, and this, what they say, hugely moving adaptation of an up-and-coming director and star, Kristen's own 2013 Academy Award-winning short, Curfew. So it sounds like someone to tug at those nice little heartstrings. And in the box office, now we can talk about something a little bit more exciting. The Hunger Games, with no surprise, Mockingjay Part 1, even though it's only critic rated 66%, pulled in a whopping $121.9 million. Surprised? Me neither.
No.
Big Hero number 6, or Big Hero 6 rather, pulled in additionally 20.1. Interstellar pulled in additionally 15.3. And Dumber and Dumber 2 pulled in 14.1. I'm partially surprised Dumb and Dumber 2 got that much. I'm also not all that surprised because of the cult following it has.
But at least two people at my work had plans to see that.
Yeah.
Me? Not so much.
I haven't seen any of them, so you know, why start now?
Yeah.
Why ruin a good thing?
Exactly.
It's like not hearing what did the fox say all the way through.
Now I have that stuck in my head.
Oh, thanks, man.
What a jerk. But no, Hunger Games. We went out last weekend and saw it. We, for some of the bigger movies like that, we go to one of the really elaborate theaters where you can order food and adult beverage and whatnot, and they'll bring it to you.
Fancy.
Yeah, although we had a little drama with this one. We'll get into that in a minute. But Hunger Games, if you're a fan of the previous ones and you haven't seen this one yet, why not?
Been like a week, what?
Exactly. It was really good. I mean, it had a decent length to it, which I like. I mean, you get your money's worth.
Oh, yeah.
Some people may have said that it was slow, and yeah, there may not have been a lot of action, but that doesn't mean nothing was going on. I felt a lot of the slow stuff was met with a lot of like real strong emotional presence.
There was a lot of gravitas to the movie, basically saying there was a lot of emotion. I mean, just because we didn't see an epic gunfight didn't mean that things weren't as tense.
Yep. Yeah, they did a really good job of setting the mood with the audience for the bulk of the movie. Even if you weren't seeing anything or whatever, you felt the tension, which was, I think, can be tough to do this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, we are joined by Marjorie Tyrell now.
Yeah, our good friend Marjorie Tyrell from Game of Thrones. Natalie...
Dormu, whatever.
Dorman? Wow.
We're terrible, apparently.
Shame on me. Anyway.
Where's the research?
What?
Where's the research? Yeah.
Where's the research? I don't know. It came out... Wade pulled it out of his backside. Okay. Although I was a little bummed out, I was under the impression that the lady who plays Brienne... in Game of Thrones. She had said that she was going to be part of the Hunger Games, and I thought it was going to be this movie, but apparently it's going to be in part two. About halfway of the movie, I was thinking, hey, where's so-and-so? And she never showed up. Wah, wah.
Aww.
Aww. Tear. So yeah, a little bit of drama with the theater, though. My daughter had ordered her food a certain way. It wasn't that way, and I had to kind of yell at the manager a little bit, because you spend good money in there. I mean, the tickets are $19 a head.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so, definitely not a cheap place to see a movie. Yeah,
you expect to get, you know, decent service and quality, and hers wasn't. He ended up refunding us her meal and making her a new one for us to take home with us. So
it's almost kind of funny when we're leaving and you hear a pack of girls go, oh, this is $20 a ticket a head, and the other one goes, what? Yeah. Like, surprise!
Where was their research? Finally, though, in movie news, are you guys fans of the Jurassic Park movies?
I've seen yes. The things that is actually coming to fruition.
Jurassic World is coming out 2016. I believe it's June 12th. It's with Chris Pratt, who we all know is Star-Lord and also the voice of Emmett in the Lego movie. Looks really interesting. The main premise here is that the park has opened. There are people on the island or wherever the park now exists. But the scientists decided that just cloning and birthing dinosaurs wasn't enough. They had to go and genetically modify a hybrid. Because that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, because they didn't learn from the first three movies.
Right? So that's coming. The trailer looks really good. Hopefully it stands up in the critics. I will be looking forward to seeing that, but that is a good 6 months away.
Was there like three?
There were three. There was the main one that everyone knows and loves. There was number two, where that's where the T-Rex is brought back to San Diego, wreaks havoc on the town. And then number three is like where Grant goes back to the island to save a kid, and that's where the big finned
Stegosaurus.
Like, Stegosaurus. It's like a T-Rex stature, but bigger with a fin, and is kind of semi-aquatic. Anyway, that's with William H. Macy too. He was in that. Yeah, probably not the best work, but
the books are better.
Say that again. The books were better.
I said the books are better.
Yeah, thanks. And with the close of Jurassic Park movie news, it's time for real news.
So this story is a little bit old, but I decided to use it anyway because there have been some recent developments that really renew it and make it relevant again. So reaching back to November 5th, a former NSA lawyer says that the reason BlackBerry failed was because they put too much encryption in their phones. And he's trying, out of the goodness of his heart, to reach out to Google and Apple to warn them not to make the same mistake again.
Right, because the NSA killed the BlackBerry.
Well, see, and that's where the waters get a little murky, because one of the reasons RIM, Research in Motion, which was the company that made BlackBerry, was so successful during its period, was because of its level of encryption, they actually got Department of Defense contracts.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only phone you were allowed to use if you worked for the DOD, if you worked for the FBI. Any kind of official government work that you needed to do on a smartphone, you were only allowed to use a BlackBerry because it was secure.
Yep. And now the NSA is saying it failed because of that security.
Well, yeah, the NSA officially is not, but this guy was a lawyer for the NSA. He's since retired. But yeah, that's his take on it. And this is coming out with the recent shot across the bow that both Google and Apple have given to the entire espionage community. iOS 8 and the iPhone 5S. And Google with Android, I forget the version number, 4.4, I think it is. It's Lollipop. Both of them come encrypted by default. They are taking the stand that, you know what, most of the time these people, you bring it somewhere to be serviced anyway. And if you're doing backups, which they try to make you do by default, you're fine. So let's just go ahead and encrypt the phone.
Just
take the guesswork right out of it, and they're doing it in such a way that both Google and Apple are saying the encryption key, which we've talked a little bit about keys before, but the actual piece of software that does the encrypting, everything is embedded on the phone. So they're essentially wiping their hands of it. The government cannot subpoena Google. Well, I suppose they could issue a subpoena, but it will do them no good to subpoena Google or Apple because they don't have the keys. They don't want the keys. Don't give them to us. We don't want to see them. They're on the phone.
Yeah, that's localized only.
Yep. They're taking themselves out.
The DRM and the Apple and Google?
Nope, they're wiping their hands of it. They want out. You know, this is completely a user deal. So make sure you have a password on your phone. Even just a simple numeric password is enough to enable the encryption by default. And as a little side note to that, as case law is bearing out at the moment, if you use a password of any kind, even just a four-digit numeric, then current case law shows that they cannot compel you to tell your password. Because that is potentially testifying against yourself.
Yeah, however, it's against the Fifth Amendment.
It's against the Fifth Amendment. However, if you use a fingerprint to secure your phone, that is not covered under the Fifth Amendment, and it is counted as personal data that is they can compel you to give.
How interesting.
Yes. So, fingerprint access, at least for the moment, until privacy laws are strengthened, fingerprint access is for convenience and security against theft of the phone, but not security against three-letter government agencies.
CIA?
FBI? Sure. Absolutely. So, yeah, fingerprint won't protect against that, but even just a simple four-digit numeric password will. And then to segue from that, with what brought this into current focus again, our friends at the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, have launched a new initiative again, attempting to make this as difficult as possible. Traditionally, the internet is unsecured because it didn't ever need to be. and it doesn't switch to anything of any kind of security until the website that you're visiting chooses to and explicitly makes it secure. So, for instance, when you go to the bank and you switch to a HTTPS, a secure connection,
yep,
the server has to do that. Now, we've come to expect that from things like the bank or when you're shopping and you go into a shopping cart where you're entering your credit card number. We've come to expect to look for that lock, make sure it's secure. But by and large, the majority of the internet is not secure and hasn't needed to be. And the process of making your website secure has been fairly complex. It's a very involved process that can take hours just on your side, and you still have to buy the certificate, and it's just a real pain in the rear end. So, what the EFF is doing is they have partnered with a bunch of different agencies, and we'll put links in the show notes, but Mozilla and Cisco are a couple, Akamai, which is a content delivery network, along with the University of Michigan, and they're aiming to make a new protocol which streamlines making your website secure. They're hoping to get it down to just a couple of clicks instead of hours of work. And for basic encryption, they are going to be setting up their own key issuing organization that will be doing it for free.
Sweet.
Their goal is to make the entire internet secured. Whether it needs it or not, encrypt everything. The initiative is called Let's Encrypt. It will be launching in 2015. Details are in the show notes. I think it's a brilliant idea. You know, the three-letter government agencies, I think we can agree, have overstepped their bounds and are just being draconian in the way they're trying to dragnet everything. So I am in favor of making it as difficult as I can. I have no problem with real police work, but you don't get that for free.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, wow. You do your job.
Yeah. You don't get a free ticket.
No.
Well,
so
speaking of more security for, I guess, for you.
Yeah. Do tell. Well, speaking of some degree of security and more the lack of enforcement or lack of adherence, there has been several sightings in New York, mainly around the JFK airport, by commercial pilots who have been seeing drones, you know, the multi-rotor, quadcopter-type drones out there, in essentially the airspace of landing aircraft. One of them reported seeing a drone within 5 to 10 feet of the commercial aircraft's left wing on its landing approach, and definitely causing an issue. I mean, if there was to be a collision, even a small drone like that, if it would get sucked into a turbine or whatever, that's toast.
Oh, yeah. You hear bird strikes.
Yeah. I mean, now you're throwing metal into the mix. Anyway, there are some rules to adhere to per the FAA, and that is that the FAA prohibits drones from flying above 400 feet, period. I mean, anything beyond that, you get into having to be regulated. And additionally, if you're flying a drone within 5 miles of an airport, you are required to alert the airport and the air traffic control unit in the area so that they can be aware of what's going on. They've been starting to see a few of these sightings. It started Sunday and another one, I guess, on Wednesday. Local police in Nassau County of New York have sent up helicopters in search for drones and hasn't witnessed them directly. All the pilots that were involved in sightings have noted that they did not take any evasive maneuvers. all flights did land safely, smoothly, without consequence. But, you know, I'm really interested in getting a drone. I think they're awesome. I think with the GoPro, I think it'd be a lot of fun. But you see stories like this, and you got to be aware of what you're doing and where you're doing it.
Absolutely. And I think the FAA regulations to date have been extremely reasonable. Not overbearing at all. To your point, I don't think, and this is just my opinion, I have nothing to back this up, but I don't think it would cause a problem for a commercial airliner. The drone will get ingested into the engine and get spat out the back in shards.
They say a bird getting sucked through a turbine, which is a lot less moving or hard parts, can wreck a turbine engine. I mean, what happens
when you throw it? It can damage it. It won't necessarily cause a catastrophic failure, but it will cause damage. I mean, yeah. They're going to have to take that plane offline and check the engine for sure. And my big problem with this is a new and emerging technology. Mm-hmm. I get it. It's fun. I certainly am on board with you, Garrett. I think the whole concept of having a multi-rotor copter with a camera is kind of cool. But it's idiots like this that are going to ruin it for everybody else.
Yep.
You know, the FAA has put reasonable restrictions. Don't be stupid is essentially all the rule is.
Yeah.
You know? And you're going to endanger not endanger, but potentially damage commercial aircraft because what? You want a closer view? I mean, you're being an idiot. Knock it off.
Here's a helicopter pilot back in June reported that he almost had a midair collision with a drone that was flying at the same altitude. Now, it doesn't say what that altitude was. And he claims that he didn't see it until it was a few feet from the aircraft. And I don't necessarily deny that. I mean, some of these drones can get pretty small in size. And if they got a strong enough motors on them, I mean, they can reach some pretty serious altitudes. And it is worth noting, too, that the drones aren't just a consumer product for pure enjoyment. There's a lot of companies now using drones equipped with cameras for all sorts of different things. You've got cinematography, you've got construction, where they want to maybe pan up or look at something without having to actually pull a crane or things like that. And, you know, some of those can occur near an airport, but obviously if they're done correctly, there shouldn't be any issues. Some farming areas are using them so they can quickly pan over crops or whatever, or their fields, and make sure everything's good before, instead of just having somebody walk up and down the fields.
Well, that's kind of awesome.
I mean, the uses for these things are amazing. In cinematography, truly, they're using these instead of actually contracting full-on helicopters, saving thousands of dollars, and just having some guy come out with a cinematic grade drone and cinematic camera to, get the shot that they need. So, I mean, it's a great industry and there's all sorts of different factors in it. I saw a video today that I shared to my personal Facebook of, racing drones.
Huh.
They do like forest races. And one of them compared it to Star Wars and the moon of, Endor with the speeders through trees. Cause they got onboard cameras. So it's field, it's like POV flying. Some of the guys have some of the video headsets, that you can wear like on an airplane or whatever to watch your movies. That links to a receiver that gets the footage from the drone. And they're flying and racing through the woods in predetermined courses. It's pretty cool stuff.
But we do go back to that caveat. It only takes one person to screw it up.
Yep. I mean, if one of these were to really collide with an aircraft in a way that caused a serious issue and put lives at risk, then
the whole thing would be shut down.
Yep. Yeah,
I could definitely
game over.
I could definitely see these being be illegal if that were to happen.
Illegal or
hiding.
Having to register them so if something happened it could be traced back.
Well, and the FAA is already considering rules that would require if you're going to do any kind of drone flying for hire. If you're a film crew being hired to do shots, anything that where money changes hands in order for you to fly, that they're considering requiring you to have a pilot's license.
That's pretty interesting, actually.
I don't think it's unreasonable.
I do and I don't. I mean, I think
you're going into airspace that is occupied by other aircraft, and we're requiring all those other aircraft to be manned by pilots with licenses.
I get what you're saying, but if you were to misuse your drone and crashed it into a tree, the only risk is to your own equipment. I understand there should be maybe a subgrade of a pilot course that is education and some sort of certificate that you understand all the FAA rules, regulations, and are bound to adhere to those.
Holy crap, I might as well just take the pilot school then.
But, you know, you're not actually physically going into an aircraft to pilot anything, so I don't necessarily seeing a full pilot course in that regard. I'm not refuting what you're saying. Some of your points are definitely valid. I'm just not sure I agree 100%.
Sure. You're entitled to be wrong.
That's right. I'm entitled to be wrong. Thanks.
That's right. And you know, you look at the differences between air travel and vehicle, or, you know, motor travel. There's a reason why air travel is safer. And it's because it's so heavily regulated and the pilots are held to such a high standard. And now you're talking about sending up, you know, unregulated vehicles into the space.
Yep. Nope. No disagreement in that regard.
You know, so no, I'm in favor of it. I think there should be reasonable restrictions on personal, you know, maybe we should require them to be hooked up to an altimeter that they're not allowed to go above a certain altitude. You know, I start mean, locking that in because otherwise you end up with these idiots that fly them where they're not supposed to go and in danger.
Well, it's lives all fine and good to say, well, why don't we do this and why don't we do that and this, that, and the other. There will always be people out there who will find a way to get around that, whether they have to be sold with an altimeter that's a limiter and someone goes in and either reconfigures it or removes that. They have to be registered and someone buys one and doesn't register it, buys it secondhand or whatever. You're always going to get loopholes or people that try to cheat the system. I mean, it's the same with gun control.
You have I agree, but I don't think that means we don't do anything.
Sure. I mean, I don't refute that either. I think there's ways to do it that are reasonable, that we would hope people would adhere to.
How easy would it be to put in a chip with like a radius detector where it goes within, let's say, if you go 5 miles, it starts beeping going, hey, you're in a pretty much no-fly zone, or heading near a no-fly zone here.
Like an RF jammer?
And then if you get, 2 miles in, the thing just shuts down.
It drops out of the sky.
Onto the freeway, gets run over by a semi, guy sues the airport.
No, we said, you know what? We warned you.
Yeah.
We had you take this class, and we gave you the information that says if you get in this particular radius of a no-fly area, this will happen.
Yeah. There's units in the craft that if you fly too far out of range of the remote, some of them have GPS sensors that they will return to wherever they took off at, provided you set that. Cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. If you say your batteries die in the remote or something like that, it says, oh, return to home. I mean, there's obviously ways to do it. It's just a matter of, is it cost effective and or does it make sense from a regulatory standpoint at this point?
Well, your cost-effective argument will go out the window the first time a person dies.
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement. Obviously, human life comes first. So
absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, Wade, we've been blabbing on for a while. Why don't you jump into the mix here?
Yeah, I'm considering something on a bit more entertaining than the loss of human life.
Lay it on me.
Yeah. World of Warcraft, you can see all its first, well, 4th, 5th expansion by now, Warlords of Draenor. I have been playing it. It's really nice. It's unfortunately not without its issues. Their trifecta of what Blizzard got hit with on the launch was rather debilitating, I would actually say. Not only did we have the game resurged to 10 million subscribers. But we had those 10 million hitting the servers all at once because people want to play. People spawning at the same areas, at certain set areas, quite a bit. And then they were subjected to more DDoS attacks.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit offline. I mean, it's surprising that a company like Blizzard, with a game like Warcraft that has been their bread and butter for
10 years.
10 years. That's right. They just had their 10-year anniversary. They just had their
10-year anniversary. Yep.
Yep. Is still so naive to the fact that when they release a new big expansion, people are going to want to play it.
Well,
I mean, what a crazy concept.
I mean, we saw this with Diablo that we talked about. We see it with every game that they do. Every time they release a major update that, you know, you got to buy or an expansion or a new game, whatever, people want to play it. And then they don't, you know, have those systems in place to allow it.
I'm shocked that people would want to play a game they paid money for. I mean,
that they pay $17 a month for.
Obviously, they didn't think that through.
I'm going to say that I have agreed with you is that I consistently say that Blizzard does not take into effect the size of the fan base and what the fan base is willing to do. I mean, God, remember back a couple months ago, I got on a train to L.A. and pretty much walked across the city to get to a theater that was jam-packed.
Yeah, and turned you away because there were too many people there already.
Yeah. I mean, if I was Blizzard, I mean, I know hangars that are out near here. I mean, closer to Blizzard headquarters, we do know where that is. Not threatening or anything.
But like, I mean, Blizzard, we know where you are.
I mean, I would love to see a launch party in a hangar. That'd be awesome.
It'd be pretty cool.
But
you got to be aware, though, too, just to stop you briefly, that the base of their consumers are not here around the headquarters. So they have to do things that are going to be at least near either a major destination or a major means of transport, like L.A., like San Diego. So
understand that. I mean, the hangars are in Tustin. So.
I know, but where people can get to it, you're going to want to go to a more major city for ease of that purpose.
People fly to L.A. to get to Anaheim for BlizzCon, so they're willing to make that jump. But there will always be people who will complain like, oh, they always do something in California. It's like, well, that's where their headquarters are people.
Yep. I agree with that. I've
made this discussion several times over. Anywho, yep, WoW servers were subject to DDoS attacks, causing some issues for the game. And some YouTubers have even described that they were in queues for 73 minutes and upward just to play the game, to access their characters in the servers.
What was it with Diablo? Error 43?
Is it 43? It was like 37 or something like
that. Maybe it was 37. Something like that.
Cannot access servers. Shouldn't that be like issue one?
Yeah, error number one. Can't connect. Yeah, I mean, hopefully obviously they got it fixed, but you wonder, would they have gotten a DDoS attack if they had the servers up and running at day one? Or was that a reaction to a gamer who couldn't get into the game that they bought?
Well,
my question to that is, have they released any information about that? Was it a malicious DDoS attack, or was it just the fact that 10 million people tried to get on the server all at once? They haven't
released any information. I mean, we don't know if it's the same squad as from last time, being the Lizard squad, I believe it was. But, I mean, it's really getting to a point where just doing this kind of thing, I've said it before, where people write viruses and just create general problems for other people are pretty much scum in my book. You know, to where people just want to play a game and you're doing this just for the fun of it. You know, you're DDoSing this just for the fun. That's what ticks me off.
And my surprise on Blizzard's part, you know, there are, I understand that they don't need to maintain the same level of servers consistently as they do at a new launch, right? There's going to be that initial surge of everybody wants to play, and then it'll taper off. But there are companies out there that do temporary servers. You rent a server for as long as you need it. So, you know, they should have rented a couple thousand more servers just for the first couple weeks, get over the initial surge, and then taper it back down to their normal levels. And
the funny thing is that they were actually merging servers for a while the expansion was in progress of being built. So it's like, kind of shot yourself in the foot there, didn't you, Blizz?
Yeah. A little bit.
You lowered the number of servers and didn't expect 10 million people to slam it.
Well, what happened to those servers that they had consolidated and had spares? You know, could they have those in a closet they could have implemented and utilized and had ready to go at the time, or were they just totally blind?
Well, yeah, like I've said, they have always seen to disregard the size of their fans. BlizzCon, again, is a great example of this, where, oh, it's okay, we'll just raise our ticket prices, and they sell out in minutes.
Yep.
Blizzard, please go to a bigger venue, lower your prices, and control your tickets, please. Because there are actually fans that want to go to your events, but we get scalpers and people who are selling the tickets in front of the convention. So Blizzard really needs to get to work on their handling of mass events.
Get a PR person involved. All right, so Blizzard's dropping the ball.
Hell, I'll do it. Hire me, God.
Well, while we're talking about security, we've had quite a few security and network-related things. This is going to be an interesting twist on this one, but I'm assuming both of you guys have heard about the vaporizers, the new electronic cigarettes, e-cigarettes.
Yes, indeed.
The vape pens.
Yep, those ones. And supposedly they're the great new thing, and you can get your nicotine fix without most of the harmful chemicals. But did you know that they are dangerous for your computer?
A computer?
For your computer.
Go on.
You don't say.
Enlighten us.
So, this, actually, we did a podcast, I believe, and we're going back maybe a year.
Really?
We did a podcast. I don't know if you guys know that.
Oh, amazing.
I want to say it was maybe a year ago where we covered the basics of this, but it's raising its head again. Most of the e-cigarette devices, pens, whatever you want to call them, are manufactured by our good friends in China.
Mm-hmm.
Which, where most of our stuff in America is manufactured.
Yep.
Well, going back to our podcast about a year ago or so, there is a flaw in the USB specification that can be exploited, and that is what some of these Chinese manufacturers are doing. It has been discovered in actual cigarette chargers.
Yes, let me stop you real quick there, because Wade's got a blank look on his face. A lot of the e-cigs have all of them have some sort of a battery. Battery holds a charge that powers the heating element that then vaporizes the fluid.
Liquid, yep.
Okay. So a lot of those plug into USB to charge it.
Because that's the new standard, right? Everything charges through USB.
Yeah, I'm going to charge my car with a USB.
One day.
I'm going to use a USB out of the cigarette lighter to plug it back into the car. Infinite power.
That's brilliant right there.
See?
Anyway.
What a maverick.
But, so what the security researchers have discovered is some of the e-cigarette chargers have actual viruses and malware in the USB port.
Wow.
Nice.
So you plug your e-cigarette charger into your computer to charge it and get a quick fix, and your computer has spyware, malware. They found keystroke loggers to record your passwords.
So use a wall charger, people.
Well, that's the short version. The USB problem still exists, and is they're trying to address it from the USB Foundation, but that's going to be a long time in the coming. But, yeah, the long and short of it is, if you have a device that doesn't absolutely require the USB on your computer, right? If your smartphone, maybe you need to plug it into your computer to transfer files. You know, your printer, obviously you need to plug it in to print. But all these side devices that are only using power or only supposed to be using power, don't plug them into your computer.
Yeah.
Use a wall charger, plug them straight in. You know, in a wall charger, they have no effect. There's no data connection at all, but you plug them into your computer and who knows what you're getting.
That's spooky. That's what we get for making everything in China, though.
Well, that's what we get for making everything unsecure. Insecure.
The only thing
not securable.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think about is like when I hear keyloggers is China and being a WoW player being thinking, you want to get my WoW password through a vape pen? That is some really indirect freaking moves.
Well, what's really funny about this and why I've when you brought it up earlier, I had a chuckle. There's a local cyber center, you know, cyber cafe, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Right around the corner from us, just down the street. And inside of that establishment, they sell vape pens. They sell e-cigs. And so you've got gamers sitting on their bank of computers, on their bank of networks, buying their e-cigs there and
puffing away,
sitting there and plug them into the computer to charge. And I mean, I can only imagine if just one was infected that they plugged in and
access server. Server down.
Error 37. That's pretty funny, though, and you may want to, if you go over there, you may want to say something to him, like, hey, you know, I got this article that maybe you guys should think about this, just to be aware.
Are you allowing your guy, your customer base, to plug into the computers to...
They may not. They may block all the USB ports for their own security anyway.
You probably have to look.
For, you know, fear of someone walking in with a USB drive that's got on it that infects everything, too. Who knows?
Someone walks in with a USB drive that connects the server and keylogs freaking 50, 60, 100 WoW passwords.
Yep.
So, public service announcement, your security sucks.
That's right. If you got an e-cig, vape pen, charge it on the wall, not your computer.
Yep.
Well, I think this has been a good one, guys. I mean, we're right at our hour mark. We re-engage with our listener base. Holistically.
Hi. We love you.
That's not creepy. But on that note, I think with all Wade's creepiness involved,
don't turn around.
We'll catch you next week.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.